Final thoughts. The goal beyond stage 10 is to use the power of shamatha for the continued awakening of insight and to progress to the highest level of complete awakening. The practice in this book is shamatha vipassana, but we have focused mostly on the stages of shamatha. The reason was purely practical: to prepare the mind as quickly as possible for the ultimate goal of insight and awakening. With every stage of shamatha you pass through, the possibility of insight grows more likely and increases quite dramatically with each stage from 7 on. Many of the techniques described in the later stages are intended to generate insight experiences. Indeed, few meditators master stage 10 without having significant insight. Many will have reached at least the first level of awakening. Much more could be said about insight and awakening than can fit into this book, so it must wait for another time. While unlikely, it's possible for someone to master shamatha without achieving insight or awakening. Therefore, it's worth discussing why this might happen, as well as some of the limitations of shamatha, to help protect you from this potential problem. Shamatha and vipassana. The limitations of shamatha. Persistent shamatha between meditation sessions is a truly wonderful accomplishment and something to celebrate. Yet never lose sight of the fact that shamatha and vipassana must work together. They are like two wings of a bird. You need both to arrive at your ultimate destination. Too often, however, practitioners forget this relationship and emphasize either shamatha or vipassana. For listeners of this book, the danger is placing all the emphasis on shamatha, seeing this super-refined state of mind as the goal, rather than the ideal state for achieving insight and full awakening. Always remember that even though shamatha is extraordinary, it's still a conditioned mental state. When those causes and conditions cease, shamatha dissolves. Even though shamatha persists for longer after stage 10, it still starts fading, gradually but continuously, from the moment you get off the cushion. Life events chip away at this refined state of consciousness, and unconscious sub-minds diverge from consensus, creating inner conflict. Other sub-minds in turn react with aversion, and unification starts unraveling. When enough of your buttons get pushed at once, shamatha will fail. Even if you just spent 3 hours in deep jhana, if something significant enough happens, shamatha disappears altogether. In an ideal environment, we would always be able to meditate again and return to a state of high unification before shamatha fades. We might succeed in avoiding the kind of events that disunify the mind for a long time, perhaps remaining in a continuous state of shamatha for months. But very few listeners of this book are likely to find themselves in such ideal conditions. Even those so fortunate can never be sure how long those conditions will last. And everyone eventually finds him or herself unable to sustain a regular practice due to sickness, old age, or failing mental faculties. That's why shamatha isn't the final goal of the spiritual path. Instead, consider it a rare and precious opportunity to achieve the true goal, insight and awakening. The unsurpassable mind of shamatha gives you immediate access to the deepest form of jhana, to every kind of insight practice, and allows you to practice mindfulness in daily life with incomparable effectiveness. In other words, it creates the ideal conditions for liberating insight into the true nature of reality and an awakening that isn't subject to passing away. The unification of mind in shamatha is temporary and conditioned. However, the unification around insight is far more profound, and it's permanent. When temporary unification around a shared intention fades, each sub-mind operates as a separate entity, constrained by and at the mercy of the mind system as a whole. Therefore, individual sub-minds strive to preserve their autonomy and as much as possible, direct the resources of the mind system toward their individual goals. Yet after insight, the various sub-minds become unified around a shared insight into impermanence, emptiness, suffering, no-self, and interconnectedness. From this flow a corresponding set of shared values, harmlessness, compassion, and loving-kindness. Now each sub-mind operates as an independent part of a much greater whole, working for the good of that whole. This allows each sub-mind to do its job effectively, without running into fundamental conflicts with other sub-minds. When enough of the mind system has undergone this transformation, we're able to function as an individual person while simultaneously perceiving ourselves as part of an indivisible and inconceivably greater whole. T.S. Eliot beautifully described the nature of this transformation. "We shall not cease from exploration, and the end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we started and know the place for the first time." T.S. Eliot, Four Quartets, Little Gidding. The illusion of separate selfhood, with all its attendant suffering, is gone. We can be fully present as persons, here and now, realizing that this personhood is just an ever-changing, selfless construct arbitrarily imposed on an interconnected whole. Here is merely another construct imposed on infinite space, and now is a similar construct imposed on eternity. This concludes The Mind Illuminated by Chula Dasa, John Yates, Ph.D., and Matthew Immergut, Ph.D., with Jeremy Graves. Narrated by Sean Renette. Copyright 2015 by John Charles Yates.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.